This podcast is an unedited excerpt from an MCLE program presented at MCLE's Conference Center in Boston, Massachusetts. Get 24/7 instant access to over 400 criminal law e-lectures and more with a subscription to the MCLE Online Pass. Learn more at www.mcle.org/onlinepass. Please note that MCLE's products, services, and communications are offered solely as an aid to developing and maintaining professional competence. The statements in this recording may not apply to your circumstances, and no legal, tax, accounting, or other professional advice is being rendered by MCLE or its speakers. For full terms and conditions, please see the MCLE website.
So, in thinking about this and asking this question, and I want you to think about it, does the race of the whatever, and I don't use the word stakeholder either, because to me, I don't like that word. Because if it's a criminal prosecution, I feel that my clients or our clients are the only ones to really have something at stake, because everybody else gets to go home, even the victim. Okay, I'm mindful of the lexicon all the time, because words matter. Okay, so does the race of the, let's start with the defendant. Does the race of the defendant matter to you, Vicki?
Absolutely it does. Absolutely it does.
And why and how?
If I have a client who is not a white client, and I think this would apply to any other race of person who is coming before the court, it's going to matter from the moment they are brought into that courtroom in shackles. And they may be the only people in there that look like them in the courtroom. And so it's going to matter initially in their perception. It's going to matter about how they perceive me. Do they perceive me as an ally? Do they perceive me as somebody who's really going to fight for them? Or do they perceive me as somebody that's kind of quote unquote part of the system that is there to, you know, just churn out another case? You know, that, so from the moment I get a case, it matters to me, issues related to the race of my client. And then it may play out in lots of other ways as the case proceeds. Certainly, you know, the witnesses, the race of the witnesses. I know this is the slide about the defendant, but in terms of the way that it's going to matter to me in my representation of my client, if it is a person who is either Black, Latinx, you know, other races, I'm aware of how all of those pieces, the race of the witnesses, the other people in the courtroom, the facts of the case, how all of those are going to play out in my case and for my client, the consequences to my client.
So to be clear here, though, it doesn't matter in terms of how hard you're going to fight for your client, right? Because
absolutely not. Absolutely not. But it definitely changes the way I'm going to be looking at my case, and hopefully the way I'm perceiving things through a lens, to the best of my ability, that is sympathetic or empathetic to the way that my client may be perceiving this whole situation.
And I got to say that when I first thought about the question, does the race of the defendant matter? And I initially was going to answer no. Not for me, because once you're my client, you're mine, okay? And for the state to get to you, I don't care what color you are, they got to come through me, okay? But in the one aspect, and of course that's easier for me, if assuming that my client is Black, right? It's easy for me to relate on a shared, just the shared experience, the shared historical experience with Black clients. But I'll tell you where I have felt that I've fallen short. It's with my Latinx clients, and it's not so much race, but it's my inability to speak Spanish or to speak their language, that I feel that I am doing them a disservice because of that, or the use of an interpreter. And believe you me, I've represented hundreds of Latinx clients, some that were non-English speakers, right? And I had to use an interpreter. That just meant for me, it took longer to develop the bond. But we developed it, but it just took longer because I couldn't speak their language. Did you ever feel that way? And I'm going to get to you, Masai, because I definitely want to hear about your point.
You're asking me?
Yes.
My inability to speak Spanish? Absolutely. I am very aware of that. the having to use an interpreter absolutely interferes, I think. You know, I hope it doesn't. I mean, I do whatever I can to try to make it not, but I do think it interferes with the ability to have the same kind of relationship with a client that I would have who's speaking English, because there is a barrier there. I'm going to a second person, you know. I don't know if there's cultural issues too that I'm not able to pick up on because I'm not understanding. And I've spoken to there's an interpreter that I use sometimes who's very, very helpful in this area where, you know, there are specific cultural issues that I'm not picking up on, in part because I'm not able to speak directly the same language. So I am aware of that as an issue, certainly.
So I guess I brought it up by way of analogy that the barriers that you have with Black clients that I don't have, but I also have with Latinx. And you're right, and it's cultural as well as the inability to speak the language. And okay, and we'll get to that, the other part of it later. Go ahead, Masai. Does the race of the defendant matter to you?
In a perfect world, it should not, right? Because as you stated, no matter who the defendant is, it doesn't. I'm not treating white defendants differently than I'm treating Black defendants. However, or any other ethnic minority or identification. However, race does matter. The race of the defendant does matter. Here's why. Before you, Vicky and Nan, even see your client, I know who your client is. I'm working that case. I know how the identification of that client went. If that is a witness identification, then race does matter. It matters what people say, how they describe them on that particular front. But also, when the client comes into the courtroom, race again matters, because as you all have said, sometimes that person is the only person in the courtroom who looks like them. And it's important that we are making sure that we are treating people equally, because if there are people in the courtroom in power who have different opinions about different people who don't look like them, then race matters. And it's important for especially me as a person who works for the government to make sure that we are treating them equally and not falling below what the standard is or trying to admit evidence against somebody because they don't look like the majority of the people in the courtroom. So in the end, race always matters. And that's whether you're white or Black or Latin or Asian. And even within different cultures, you know, within we say Black and we think that covers everyone, but it really doesn't, because the experience of a person who's an African-American person as opposed to a Caribbean-American or a Black person who grew up in Europe or grew up in Africa, it's very different, as well as with what Latino country you're from. Those experiences are different, and that you highlight the language barrier, but also it's not just language. The way you say certain things in certain dialects of Spanish affects how people understand. So I would say that race always does matter. We try and equal the playing field because of race, and we hope to do that in our system.
All right. So does the race of the defense attorney matter? Can I take this one first, please?
Sure.
Okay. So I am a woman. I am a public defender. I am Black. Of those three attributes, being Black defines who I am and how I move about the world. I am always conscious of it because I know that the first thing that people see when I walk into a courtroom, hell, when I walk outside my door, the first thing people see is that I'm Black, all right? Not even that, you know, I'm kind of short or, you know, I got 16 colors in my hair. The first thing, that, and because of that, I am judged accordingly. And I know that I am judged as less. And so then, just like Masai had said earlier, because of that, how I am viewed by others shapes and informs me. And so definitely, I believe that the race of the defense attorney matters.
Vicky, you want to go next, or you want me to jump
in? Go ahead.
Okay. So I don't really, I think it's important to have attorneys of all walks of life, especially in our system, to have people who are representative of the population and the clients we serve. And in Massachusetts, we have people who are charged with crimes are overwhelmingly people of color. And I think it's important to have Black attorneys and Latino attorneys and female attorneys But from my perspective as the prosecutor, as the opponent, all I want is a qualified attorney, an attorney who's going to put forward their best effort in court. And it pains me more when the attorney is not doing what I would consider an adequate job for their client, and it forces me as the prosecutor to have to jump in and do some things for the client, because that's not my role, but ultimately it is, because justice is part of it. So I understand what you guys are saying, and I agree with you, Nan. People walk in the room, and although I'm handsome, they don't necessarily say that at first. They, you know, say, oh, who's the big bald black guy? So, you know, and I'm comfortable with that, and I have no problem with people acknowledging that I am a person of color, that I am an African American. I don't try to hide that. Why would I? I can't if I wanted to. But I want you to treat me with the respect that you would treat any other lawyer in my position or any other person in my position when I walk into that courtroom, no matter who you are.
So you don't feel, as a black man and lawyer, irrespective of the prosecutor part, you don't feel that when you're interacting with, let's say, white detectives or about filing a case, you are aware that, strike that, let me ask you
differently. Just ask the question.
do you feel that you being a black man impacts all the white people you work around?
Yes.
And how?
I think it matters on whether or not initially, yes, I do. I mean, there, as you know, I've been doing this for a while, and there are people I've worked with throughout the course of my career. We have a mutual respect for one another, and I think we are at a place where we work and some of us are friendly or even friends. There are other people who've never worked with me who might make assumptions about my abilities or why I'm in the position I'm in, which would suggest that I don't deserve it. And maybe they don't articulate that directly, but sometimes their actions and the based upon the requests that I make of them, especially in homicide cases where the prosecutor controls the investigation, where the reaction is not, shall we say, as friendly, or it's not reacted to in the way that I would expect. But in those cases, then we have to have a conversation about why that is and move forward, because the goal is still to get the work done. So I'm not sitting here being ignorant and saying that hasn't affected me at all. I was just answering the question about the defense attorney. I have plenty to say about the prosecutor
right.
when we get
yeah,
to that
yeah.
slide.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I wholly think that, and I hope that, you know, my history, my performance, and whatever case I've had or cases I've had have put what people's doubts to bed. And I think if I were that terrible a lawyer, I wouldn't have progressed to where I am in terms of the type of cases that I am assigned or that I'm asked to take. Which with the seriousness of the magnitude that they have.
All right, Vicki.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I think it's absolutely incumbent on all of us to have more people who are Black and Latinx in particular working in the courtroom in all areas. I mean, you've got a situation where you've got, I don't know what the percentages are off the top of my head, but very, very large percentage of the people who are coming into criminal courtrooms who are defendants are Black. And to have a vast majority of those people who are representing them be white in a situation where we are, it's very, very plain that there is structural racism that goes on in the courthouses. It's built on that, and then the whole system is built on that. To not have more people, more defense attorneys who are people of color, I think is a huge problem. So I think it matters. It matters to the courts in general. It matters to our clients. It may matter to individual clients in individual cases. They may feel much more comfortable having somebody, a Black lawyer or a Latinx lawyer, representing them. So I think it matters in both of those areas. So I don't know if that specifically answers your question, but I think that we could be doing a lot more to reach out to law students, other lawyers, to try to get more people engaged and involved in doing criminal defense work. And I know there's a lot of people that are trying to do that, but certainly the bar does not at all reflect the people who are going through the system as defendants and clients.
Yeah, it totally answers the question. And it kind of dovetails with the defendant too, you know, in terms of talking about the race of the defendant versus the race of the lawyer. Okay, moving on. Here we go.
Should I go first?
Y'all know this guy? he's now a defense attorney. But anyway, so does the race of the prosecutor matter? And Masai.
Yeah, sure. Thanks. Yeah, go ahead.
I want to answer. So for me, as a black person, okay, I don't know if it could be my job to suit up and go to work every day and I guess prosecute or put my foot on the neck of somebody who's already down on the ground and they look like me. I have to know, how do you do that?
I'm happy to answer that, but first, can I answer the question about does the race of the prosecutor matter? And then
okay,
I will
yes.
get into that. Okay.
Yes.
So I think it does, and I think it's important. We've already said this a couple of times, that the courtroom should reflect the population of the people who the communities in which it serves. And in our state, well, not just our state, across the nation, I think 95% of elected prosecutors are still white men. 95%. And in Massachusetts, we have had I think two elected prosecutors of color. And so then you drill down a little further and you talk about people who are handling homicide cases in the state of Massachusetts. I think last year there were 156 or somewhere around that number homicides across the state of Massachusetts. Clearly, all of them were not assigned. But if you walk into any courthouse, any superior court in the state of Massachusetts, your chance of finding a person of color who's prosecuting a homicide case is slim to none. And I know of three individuals in the state of Massachusetts who are handling homicide cases who are people of color. Two of them work in the Suffolk DA's office. I happen to be one of them. The other is an Asian American male. And then I'm told that there is an individual in the Middlesex County DA's office who's been prosecuting homicides for 2 years, and he also is a black man. So to me, it's important to have black people as prosecutors for several reasons. One, if you've ever gone to a party where you're the only person who looks like you, you don't know what's going on, or any kind of social function. You may be nervous about how you're going to be treated there. And it's a reflection of our society that maybe I'm going to get a fair shake if the person on the other side looks like me. Number two, the way that I scrutinize evidence as it comes in, I'm sure, is certainly different than some of the other prosecutors. We have a baseline that's the same, but, you know, based upon our experience, we see it different. So, Nan, to answer your question, for me, there's so much work that's done before court comes in determining what kind of case is going to be brought, if there's a case that's going to be brought, that my role as a prosecutor is very important in that particular piece, because I can decide based upon the discretion that's given to me, even outside of homicide cases, not only just charging what it is based upon the evidence, but if you take lesser cases, where a case is going to be prosecuted. Is it going to be prosecuted in the district court? Is it going to be prosecuted in the superior court? Neither of you can do that. And I don't mean that as a challenge. I mean, you don't have the authority to do that. And so if I'm looking at it in a lens where I say, here's a 17-year-old, excuse me, now if here's a 19-year-old kid who's from a section of Boston and he's got all these issues that are going on. He's poor, from a single household, no prior record. I want him to have some chance of succeeding, or her to have some chance of succeeding after whatever this transgression is. If a person isn't seriously harmed, if it's a property crime, there's a decision that I'm going to make as the prosecutor, especially I'm going to make as a black prosecutor, where I can divert that case or I can send that case to the district court, as opposed to charging the maximum crime that there is and having that person have a superior court conviction and even risking going to jail for their first time being in there. So I disagree with you saying putting my foot on someone's neck. If you are violent and you harm people, then I should be holding you accountable for that. And if you are taking people's lives, then I should be holding you accountable for that. And it's your job, Nan, and your job, Vicky, to prove to the jury at some point that either it was justified or that you're not the person who did it. But in terms of all the power and discretion that I have leading up to that, I'm happy to be in this role, and I would encourage other people to be in this role, because I don't want to be one of the only two black people in the state prosecuting people for homicide cases. That just seems wholly ridiculous. And quite frankly, it highlights the structural racism that we're here to talk about.
Right. So I just wanted to say two things. First off, for me, I would say that there are only two black men prosecutors, okay? Because when you say people of color and you include, I guess, an Asian American, I think for me, it's the difference between Asian Americans and black people, okay? And so, and I know you may want to say that because you want to up the stats, but no, let's keep it 100. It's only two black men who prosecute throughout the state. Okay?
Is that I'm aware of, yes.
That you're aware of, okay. Right, that's the first thing. The second thing is, you are right. You do have that charging discretion, okay? And I would hope that because you do look like the people that you are charging when it comes to the black defendants, that you would take into account that shared experience, that you would realize that this is a person who was born marginalized, okay? And in terms of, because your charging is still bringing them into the system, okay? And it's still bringing them into a racist, a system that's systemic and built on white supremacy. Okay, so I know that you have discretion. Okay, but still, you need to be mindful of the fact that it's the charging that brings them in. Okay, so that was all I wanted to say about that.
I agree that the charging.
You had to start somewhere too, and you had to start somewhere. So yes, you are now experienced and you are in, but at some point in your career, you did have to get up and argue that a black person go to jail, be mass incarcerated. Okay, so that's what I meant. Okay.
Yep, I still have that chat. I still have that task. Yeah. But there, in my mindset, there are crimes for which you should be held accountable for, and sometimes that includes jail. And there are other ways to hold people accountable for which doesn't include jail. And I try and be fair about that, try and be consistent about it, and I let the facts and the record and the harm and all those things come into the decision-making, as well as much as I can learn about a defendant. But obviously in first-degree murder cases, that is not, that's not an option. If there's a successful conviction, the person is going to be incarcerated for life without the possibility of parole. But in terms of resolving a secondary case or a manslaughter case, I certainly do consider those facts along with other things. And I know there are people who don't believe in incarceration at all. And if we can find some other acceptable punishment when people take other people's lives, I'm happy to discuss it. But at the moment, there are people who are violent and who will continue to be violent if they are not removed from our communities.
And one last question, then I'll have Vicki answer. In terms of the percentage of defendants that are filed on, given the population of black people throughout the state, what would you say are the percentages? Like, how many, I guess I'm not going to ask you this too, Vicki, like how many white people are charged?
with murder?
Yeah.
In Suffolk County?
Yeah.
I don't know those exact percentages, but I can tell you that in the homicide cases that I've had, either been assigned, tried, whatever, I would suggest that probably 10 have been white in my 23 years. I've only been doing homicide cases for 16, so that would be good.
And so, and when you say charge in terms of murder, we can talk about this later. Go ahead, Vicki.
Well, sometimes there's suspects. Some cases you can't make, right? Because you just don't have the evidence. So, I don't know. But the overwhelming percentage of the defendants in my cases are black people or Latin people. And the reason why, but also the quote-unquote high crime areas where a lot of our cases come from are also populated by similar populations, if that makes any sense.
Well, I don't really like the term high crime, but I understand what you mean.
Okay,
Vicki?
Well, I guess I would just like to say a couple things. First of all, I can't let Masai get away with this, because one thing he said was that it's the defendant's job to prove identity.
Defense attorneys.
Yes. The defense attorneys, but we really don't have any burden of proof around that. It's the prosecutor's burden to prove their case beyond a reasonable doubt.
That's correct. It is my burden when I'm in court. Yeah, that is, but
I needed to call you on that. So
that's right.
Anyway, all right. So putting that aside for the moment, I was trying to take notes while you guys were speaking. The other thing I was going to say in terms of murder sentences related to murder, of course, in our state we have life without parole, which is a huge problem. I mean, you've got people that are serving their entire lives in prison who may have been rehabilitated after, you know, some number of years, even, you know, assuming that they needed that kind of help while incarcerated, they have no opportunity to ever see the parole board. So I think there are other alternatives. Unfortunately, our legislature hasn't seen fit to see those yet. The other thing is that I do think prosecutors have a role in those cases where people are parole eligible on seconds, and oftentimes prosecutors are stepping in and not allowing for, you know, testifying or sending information so that people are there continuing to serve life sentences. So there are ways I think that prosecutors could be more active in, you know, what I think would be just sentences. You were just in terms of your statement that we have a situation where everybody has to serve life. I don't think that's...
Well, on first-degree murder, but on second-degree murder, where parole comes up, I can tell you that our office doesn't always take the same position on every case. It matters case-by-case basis who we're going to oppose and who we're not going to oppose. So on first-degree, no one has an opportunity to do that.
Well,
no.
Of course, nobody has the opportunity, but I'm just saying there really should be an opportunity for that to happen.
I don't necessarily disagree with you, but currently there isn't a mechanism for that. Currently, the legislature hasn't addressed that issue, and until they do, and until I guess people who in our system or who outside of our system want to push for that change do that. I'm just talking about the what we have now. And right now, if you are convicted of first degree murder, there is no discretion by the court, by the prosecutor, by the defense attorneys, or anyone. You are life without parole unless there is. Life in prison without possibility of parole, unless there is some sort of your case is overturned for some appellate reason.
Yeah.
Can I jump in and just ask the question? Because, of course, I've only been here 6 months and have never tried a murder case here. So, does a second degree have a determinate sentence?
It's a range now. They changed it in the last crime bill. It's a minimum 15, maximum 25, and the parties can argue for what they'd like. And the court makes the ultimate determination. And you're parole eligible, but parole eligible obviously does not mean that you are released on that date.
And can I ask about manslaughter, voluntary manslaughter? What's the max?
20-year sentence, and you could get probation for manslaughter, or you could get a house sentence for manslaughter, or a state prison sentence.
Thank you. All right, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Vicki.
No, I mean, I don't know that I had anything else really to add on this point. I mean, I think my points as to whether or not there should be more prosecutors who are people of color are exactly the same as my point relative to defense attorneys. I absolutely think that there should be. And I think that, you know, the courthouses in general should reflect the people that are going through them as defense attorneys. As defendants most specifically. I mean, they're the ones that have the most serious consequences that they're facing. They're the ones who have, you know, the system is in place and has been in place for a very long time in a way that has created structural racism within our society. And it really has to be dismantled. And I think that's one of the ways that it has to be dismantled is to have people who are working in these buildings who reflect the race of the people who are being so harmed by the system that exists currently.
Particularly since the race of the criminal defendant population is so starkly different from the state population, you know.
Yeah.
I agree. All righty. How about this? Does the race of the judge matter? Now, first of all, I mean, how many black judges do you have here?
Well, it's different in different courts. If you're talking Superior Court, very few. If you're talking District Court, very few. I've never been to Housing Court, and I've never been to Land Court, but there are very few judges. But it goes back to the systemic problem. I'm sorry, I'm kind of deferring, but, you know, we have a hard time here in the state of Massachusetts. I believe there are 7 law schools here in Massachusetts. We have a hard time retaining people of color here in our state, partly because of
the image. It's so cold.
Well, that's part of it, but partly because of the images that people saw during busing that were broadcast across the country, and Boston is our sort of the capital of our state, and people saw how these little kids were treated. I remember growing up, I'm not from Massachusetts, and whenever I was coming to Massachusetts, whether it was on a Boy Scout trip or coming here to go to college, people I know were like, you're going to Boston? You're crazy. You better not go there. Do you know how they treat black people? Blah, 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 blah. For people who'd never been, but based upon what they had seen before. And that narrative is still live in law schools. When I've gone to talk to black law students or law students of color, people ask me, how can you live here? Isn't it cold up here? Aren't people mean to you? Don't people throw rocks at you? And I've had people throw rocks at me, mostly my neighbors. But but my point is that's the systemic problem, in that we can't retain people, which makes our lawyers, we have very few lawyers of color here in the state of Massachusetts. Therefore, our pool for judges is very few. And then if you talk about the jobs that, you know, we have done, whether the public service jobs in the state, you talk about the salaries for public defenders and salaries for prosecutors, where it doesn't make it sustainable for anyone who wants to come and do that work, where they can go to another state and make 6 figures being 1 year out of law school doing the same work. Where in here, I should know this, but I think the starting salary for a prosecutor in Massachusetts by statute was $45,000 or $55,000. I mean, can you imagine coming out of law school with $200,000 worth of loans and that's all you make? And that leaves the ability for the people who can do these jobs, and I include public defenders in this, is either people who come from resources already, which most black families don't. I mean, some do, but most don't. People who have significant others who have an income and therefore they can afford to take a lower paying job, or someone who works 2 jobs. And how long is that sustainable with the caseloads that you have as a public defender or a prosecutor in these busy courts? So to get back to your end, does the judge matter? The judge matters, yes. The race of the judge matters, especially if that judge is a racist.
Exactly.
especially if that judge is not cognizant of what the systemic racism that I think we're trying to talk about here and how that could affect the defendant. So in short, I think all those things matter.
So, of course, you know, I guess I did it in reverse, because and let me just tell you, it was less than a year ago when I left, and believe me, people back in L.A. were saying, man, how the hell are you going to Boston? I mean, why are you leaving L.A. to go to Boston? You know, because it is hashtag so white, okay? You know, and you are, and I'm such a militant. You know, like, you know, oh my God, man's going to end up getting arrested. because I'm all about Black Lives Matter, and I'm a protester. So yeah. But let me also add this. So 2 years ago, I did like a little research. And in 2017, so that's almost 3 years ago, in 2017, throughout the country, there were only 3,000 black 1Ls in the entire state. So law school enrollment is down. And then undergrad enrollment is down for black people. So it's going to I'm almost feeling like black lawyers, we're going to become like a relic. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think we need to start efforts before law school, or before, you know, because that's the only way we can cultivate, you know, a population of so like when I want to rail against, you know, it's not enough black people in the courts, it's not enough black judges, there's not enough black people going to college. So, you know, so I think, you know, I think we have to bust it down to the amoebas damn near to get it back up and ever to find any racial equity. So yeah, so that was my 2 cents. But yeah, I'm sorry. And the race of the judge matters, because I want a judge who has, again, that shared experience of my black client when they look at them, you know, standing there before them and about to sentence them, that they will have some compassion, only unless, of course, they're not Clarence Thomas, but, you know, have some compassion towards somebody who looks like them. You know, so the race of the judge absolutely matters.
Did Vicky want to chime in there?
Well, I would agree. I mean, there's certainly, I mean, it does matter. It absolutely matters. It matters for a lot of reasons that you guys have already talked about. So I won't repeat sort of the structural racism issues. You know, I think the other thing, it matters the race of the judge. It absolutely matters about the rulings related to things like implicit bias and whether judges really understand those issues and whether we're going to get those kinds of rulings. So it absolutely matters so much because we've got people who have so much power over the defendants that are before them. So it matters. It matters not just to each individual case, but it matters to the bench at large, because I would hope, and I don't mean to put this on the shoulders of judges who are people of color, but I would hope that the more we have people of color who are judges who are overseeing cases, that they are able to, I don't know if educate's the right word. I am cognizant of putting burdens on people of color that, you know, it's really the white person, the white judge who should be educating themselves. I totally understand that. But I think when you have, you know, a larger number of people of color who are working in courtrooms and meeting out justice, you know, I would hope it would have an impact on colleagues and their willingness to view the cases that come before them with some understanding of racial bias and a variety of other things, that they will feel even internally more held to a certain standard, that they really are, it's important for them to, on even on their own, look into these matters. So that's another thought I have.
All right. Does the race of the victim matter?
To who?
To you.
To me, it really doesn't. I mean, the victims are, I mean, it really doesn't. I think it matters to some people. And the reason I say that is I think that in terms of violence, I think the sex of the victim matters more than the race. I think that I have seen people sentenced harsher when the males are committed violence upon females than a male upon male violence. But in terms of race, I mean, I guess in some situations it could, but it doesn't matter to me. maybe I'm being ignorant about that, but I can't think of a situation where the race of the victim mattered, except for if the victim was a victim in a civil rights violation case.
Well, how about I guess from my perspective, the race of the victim matters if, in fact, in like plea bargaining, and my client is black and it was a white woman, and I would feel like the prosecution, the offer would be skewed because it's a white woman as opposed to a black woman that's a victim. So I guess in terms of the criminal legal system, in some places, in jurisdictions, yeah, the race of the victim matters. I mean, hell, we had Emmett Till, okay? You know, so I wonder if in charging decisions, like let's say, for example, I had a case, a capital case in L.A. where my client was a white guy, upstanding, was a National Guard. We'll get to that later, but the victim was a black woman. She was it was a murder case. He was convicted. And her family was, and the DA was a white guy. And so her family was trying to push for them to seek the death penalty against my white defendant. And the DA's office did not. And there were some people who felt that it was racially motivated because he was white and she was black. And of course, since, you know, the general theme is black lives don't matter, you know what I mean? So I guess, you know, so the race of the victim does matter to me as a defense lawyer, because I, for that reason, I don't want my client to be more harshly charged if, in fact, the victim is, he's black and she's white.
Man, but in that situation, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
in that situation, I'm not poo-pooing your what you're saying here, but couldn't that decision have been made simply because your client, because the defendant was white, not because the victim was black? Like, wasn't that enough potentially not to seek the death penalty based upon what you're saying? Do you understand what I mean? In other words, if it was your defendant was white, how often did the LA County, how often did the LA County Prosecutor's Office seek the death penalty against white defendants who had done similar things, taking out her race? And that's why I'm saying is maybe it was just him being white that they didn't want to ask for the death penalty against him. It wouldn't have mattered if his victim were white, black, whatever. I'm not saying it was. I'm just saying, could that be a possibility?
Yeah, I don't believe it to be, though, because I'm certain if she were a white woman that wasn't, like, drug addicted and poor, and yeah, I think they probably would have been seeking the death penalty.
Okay.
But, of course, I'm against the death penalty, so I'm not trying to say, you know, they should have, but that was the family's position. And, you know,
sure.
I guess I could see that point being made, you know that it's disparity, because, of course, it's disparity, you know, of who's on death row, okay? So, you know. So anyway, Vicky, you have any thoughts, concerns?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the victim's race does matter to me as I'm thinking about the case, how the jury's going to view the case, things of that nature. Matt, that matters to me a lot. So that's something I'm going to take into consideration as I'm preparing the case for trial.
Do you prepare differently, though? I mean, you have to be cognizant of it, but how's the preparation different if you're, and I'm just asking, I'm not challenging.
Well,
I have a suggestion, but go ahead, Vicky.
Well, go ahead, ma'am. What's your suggestion?
Okay, because in terms of, let's say, let's take the women out. It's two males. My client's a black guy, and the victim is a white guy, okay? And we're saying it's self-defense, all right? So I would have to be concerned that a jury, my client would lack credibility just because he's black. And, you know, since he's the one charged, clearly he's saying self-defense. The white guy could have been the aggressor. Okay. So I have to, I guess, focus more on that aspect of my preparation of it, as opposed to if it were, because and that would impact everything, even jury selection, you know? So yeah, I could see Vicky's point about, yeah, it depends on what the case is.
Okay.
Yeah.
In terms of the level of preparation or how you look at it or view it. Is that what you meant, Vicky?
That's what I meant, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
We're flying through these, man.
Okay, take it away. And I want Vicky to start. Does the race of the jury matter? And by the way, that is how my first word die went. But anyway, go ahead.
Okay, well.
Except it was how many of y'all, but go ahead.
I think the race of the jury matters. And it certainly matters if my client is black or Latinx and I have an all-white jury. I'm going to be a lot more concerned about trying my case in front of an all-white jury. And the potential consequences of that, what that's going to mean for my clients. And if I have people of color who are going to understand a couple things, they're going to understand my client. They're going to understand, you know, depending on the circumstances of the case, it may be important that they understand my client's culture. They're going to understand, they may have a better understanding of the area where the alleged offenses occur. They may have a better understanding of the way police investigate cases. We are aware of, there's been a couple of cases recently where the SJC has said that yes, jurors can honestly say that they're concerned. They may have concerns about the way police officers investigate cases, and they are still permitted to sit on the jury as long as they are able to also say that they can, still be fair and impartial, that they'll look at this case, you know, as sort of afresh. But they're not supposed to come in to a courtroom and be completely devoid of their own personal experience when it may be their experience that they lived in areas that were over-policed for their entire lives. They don't have to put that aside. And so all of those things are very important to me as defense counsel, that my client look at a jury box and feel like these are people that represent the community from which he or she comes from. The way that, you know, we have a lot of problems, I think, in this state, and probably across the country, but I'm going to focus on this state. You know, I try a case, for example, in Brockton, and my client may be from Brockton, which has a much higher, you know, there's a much higher percentage of people from in Brockton who are people of color than is true of any of the area towns in that county. And so my client, when he's looking at that county, if people are chosen randomly throughout the county, you're going to have a much higher percentage of people who are white than you are if Brockton itself is weighted more heavily, which I think it should be. We've got Brockton is a much more heavily populated area. Brockton should be much more heavily weighted in terms of jury selection when we're looking at our venari. So I, for all those reasons, I think it's very important when we're talking about the race of the jury. And I think we need to do more in the state to make sure that our juries reflect the communities from which our clients are coming from.
Okay, so since I, of course, have never selected a jury here, but I did get the opportunity in real life to see one selected in Woburn. And that the jurors that came in, there may have been one juror who was of who was biracial, but I didn't see any black people in Middlesex. That's Middlesex, right? Yeah, So let me ask you this: if you don't, unless you have a black defendant, okay, and you know that you're going to have all white people, then do you select jurors based upon you, like jurors that you will be able to relate to, or you think that'll relate better to you?
I'm sorry. I can you repeat the question, man? I get a little.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a hypothetical. When you have a black defendant, okay, and you know that the whole panel, the whole veneer is going to be white people, how do you go about selecting? Do you select jurors that you think that will be able to connect to you? As a white person?
No, I'm not really concerned about whether they can connect to me. I want them to be able to understand and connect with my clients. So one of the things that I always do now is ask the court at the beginning if I can do individual voir dire and ask questions related to implicit bias. I'm not always good at describing what implicit bias is when I do this on individual voir dire. I've been fortunate in that the judges that I've asked to be able to do this have always permitted me to do that. I have heard from other lawyers that there are judges that do not permit that. But I find it very helpful, even if somebody doesn't quite understand what implicit bias is, I find it very helpful to get the feedback that I get from them. And I usually have a good sense about whether they understand the concept, whether they agree with the concept that everyone comes in with these biases. So that's one of the things that I do to try to, if I'm, you know, stuck with an all-white jury, and I have, you know, happen to have a person of color who is my client, that's certainly one of the things that's very important to me to try to gauge that. So
let me ask you to look at it a different way or think of it a different way.
Yeah.
I think your client needs you to select jurors who are going to connect to you, okay, because even for some sense of maybe a shared experience of being, I think that your clients need that because overwhelmingly, you probably won't find any who will be able to connect so profoundly as you or explain, unconscious bias and all of that. So I think maybe you should try to pick jurors who will connect to you. I think that'd be in the best interest of your clients. Then they'll trust you, they'll believe you, you know.
Well, I guess I sort of take that. I mean, I hope in any case that I'm personable, you know, that I'm likable, you know. I mean, I do sometimes get aggressive in my questioning. I hope by the time I do that, the jury is with me a little bit, and I'm not isolating them by coming across, you know, they're just seeing me as overly aggressive and beating up on people.
That's all I am. So.
You know, I try to see, gauge the jury a little bit. So try not to gouge them, but to gauge them. and see that they're with me before I go into things like that. But yes, I mean, I think in any case, I'm hoping that a jury, you know, finds me likable. I mean, so I don't know if that actually answers your question, but I'm.
It does. And the reason why I was thinking about it, because I can jury, because as I told you all, being in LA trying cases, I was very fortunate because there are occasions where I had 11 black people and one Latino. It wasn't a murder case, but it was a home invasion where the defendants were shot by a white Inglewood sergeant who responded to the 911 call and just opened fire and lived. And in that case, I had 11 black people. I was in heaven, okay? I was in heaven. Of course we won, but it had nothing to do with them being black, because the prosecutor was really bad too. But anyway, listen, so I, and jury selection for me, I have never excused and asked a black juror, never, in my hundreds of trials. Because of course, in LA, I had all the white prosecutors, you know, excusing all the black people. And so I tended to try to bond with my black jurors, okay? So I wanted them to be able, so they would trust me, they would respect me, they would follow me. Okay, and especially if it was some egregious crime, I would want the black jurors to connect more to me than to my client, because I think that would have been more beneficial to my client. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go ahead, Masai. Vicky, were you going to respond?
I'm sorry, Vicky.
No, go right ahead, Masai.
Yeah, I definitely want to ask you, how do you connect with...
the race of the juror of jurors can matter, and sometimes it does. But I think sometimes lawyers in general make assumptions about the race of the juror and how they're going to vote.
Exactly.
And I think sometimes it does a defendant a disservice to assume that a black juror is going to be a person who's going to vote, who will vote for an acquittal, especially in where I practice in Boston. You know, a lot of the violence that happens is in neighborhoods where people know each other, and our jurors come from those neighborhoods sometimes, and they're fed up with that. And many, what happens is the same thing that happens in our political system. Everybody thinks, not everybody, but there are many people who think that all black people vote one way, all Latinx people vote another way. And that just isn't how it is. There are conservative black people, there are moderate black people, there are socialist black people or liberal black people who see things differently. And that's why the voir dire that you talked about, Vicky, earlier is so important, because you can get some information about a person. And to me, when I've had cases where people are like, yeah, I'm surprised you kept that juror. You know, that juror is a black juror. I go, well, I'm a black man. but I like how the juror answered the questions. I like the thought that they gave to the issue that was put before them. So my point is that how they are going to process the information. And I think we really do run into a problem. And to segue into another issue related to juries, you know, we have a lot of challenges based upon the composition of the jury that go up to our appeals courts. And a lot of times we're guessing about the race of the juror who appeared before us. And it's just so silly. We don't need to guess. We send the jurors a mandatory questionnaire. All we have to do is put a question on there. But I can't tell you how many cases or sidebar conversations I've had, and now a couple of them are on appeal, where the race of the juror who was either admitted or excluded is at issue, because the defense sees them as one way and the prosecutor sees them as another way. And the best example I can give is, if most people saw David Ortiz walking down the street and he didn't say a word and they didn't know his name, they would think he was a black man. David Ortiz would not identify himself as a black man. He would identify himself as a Dominican. And within the Dominican country, there are people who come in all shades and colors, but that is their ethnicity. And to make that assumption, we have lawyers who do that and think that Indian people are black people or Latin people are black people and vice versa. And it will just be so much easier and clearer if we just put the question on the darn form, and then we wouldn't have to argue about it, and people would self-identify, because that's the only way to tell, especially nowadays with there's so many biracial and mixed race people, and how they identify and what their upbringing is will define how they may answer the questions that we're putting to them with the jury. So that's my two cents.
So let me ask you this. Is there any pending legislation to get that asked the question, or is it something that is it?
I don't believe there's legislation, or not that I'm aware of. I just know that I have a current case that is on appeal where the composition of the jury, and in particular two jurors that were excluded, is at issue, one of which is viewed very differently by the defense than it is by the prosecution as to what the person was, which ultimately under Batts and Soares and Jones, I think is the case, it doesn't, we'll figure it out, but how they're labeled is important, and the people choosing the label, the majority of them are not of the same race as the person who they're trying to identify, which we know is problematic.
Okay. And let me ask you, how comfortable are you all bringing a Batson? I'm used to Batson Wheeler, but I think it's Batson Soares.
Batson Soares.
Yes. How often do you bring? Have you ever?
I've never had a murder case where a Batson Soares challenge wasn't raised, either by the Commonwealth or by the defendant.
Okay.
I'm very liberal with those as well.
No. I was of the policy, and it made for a lot of uncomfortable sidebars with white judges and white prosecutors. But the first black person you kick up, the white prosecutor kicks off during, I'm bringing a challenge because I'm not going to wait. And I've actually had it granted. And in California, the remedy is you can reseat that juror that the white DA tried, the black juror that the white DA tried to kick off, and you know, and they get reseated, and they know that they would get the one kicking them off. So
yeah, here they don't know. At least we try to keep it from them.
Well, do you have the remedy that juror can be reseated after they've been excused?
Yes, but the conversations are sidebar, they're out of the juror's purview, so the juror doesn't know, which generally, unless the judge and the lawyers are bad at whispering or however the impanelment is being done.
But how can it be, though? Does the juror leave after, let's say I make the, I use the pre-interview challenge, and the juror gets up and leaves?
Every judge does it a little different in Massachusetts, and what they've, at least for murder cases, what they've been leaning toward is sort of the Thanksgiving dinner kind of thing, where it's a lawyer, two judges, the juror, they have the conversation, the juror is excused while the challenges are made or cause arguments are made, the juror is brought back in, and if they are seated, it's because they've already, the Batts and Soares issues have already been raised generally, but every judge is different. So
you'd have a different perspective though on that. So if are you saying that a white defense attorney exercises a preemptory challenge on a black juror, you would then bring a Batson Soares?
If I wanted that juror, yes. If I didn't, I wouldn't. Sometimes we both want them gone.
Right.
But I'm always going first as a Commonwealth. So
that's the only time we get to go first. That's
right.
The only time.
I always go first, and then if the defense attorney wants to raise a peremptory, that's when I would, if I wanted that juror and I thought that there was a reason that they should make a showing that their reasoning wasn't a protected class, then I would do that after their peremptory.
And you both, of course, see that also as a way of talking about race in court. Because, you know.
You have to.
But there are some lawyers that are, you know, and some, what I've observed, white lawyers who don't, you know, are tepid about bringing a Batson challenge because with the white DA, because they don't want to, they feel like, oh, I'm calling them a racist. I don't want to be calling them a racist, you know. Hmm. So it has a chilling effect on actually exercising it.
Yeah, see, from my perspective, I see prosecutors who are nervous to raise Batson Soares challenges because they don't want to accuse a person of being racist. I always laugh at that because I remember the first time one was ever brought against me, and I was a really young lawyer, didn't really know what it was. I made a record that the prosecutor was black, which has nothing to do with the Batson Soares challenge whatsoever. So, you know, you learn, you read, you grow. Uh-oh, Vicky's up.
Vicky?
Yes, man. I'm sorry, what's the question? I guess I was just gonna point out, Nan, I did have the presentation on the gang databases.
Okay, let's go. You wanna do it?
Well, yeah, I think we only have about another 10 minutes now for everybody to answer questions.
Okay.
Questions.
Okay.